Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, and we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Hi-ho, Dave.
Happy Hump Day, Melody.
Yes, it is Wednesday, November 20th, 2019. Yes, it is. I thought I was going to throw you off a little bit and say hi to you first before I said Wednesday, but no, you were too quick on that, I'll tell you.
You got to be prepared for anything on this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope we are prepared. Wendy Wilson will be joining us here right after the market report, as she does each and every Wednesday, and she always brings such great information. She's got a great topic today, too, but I'm not going to share it. I'm going to let her bring it, make sure everybody just is waiting for her to tell us what it's all about. Well, I'm going to tell you what's all about gold and silver today. And, you know, it's still hanging in there, 1473.80, up almost a buck. We had a high, 1476. It was went into red a little bit for the day, but for the most part, it was to the upside. So not a bad day for gold at 1473.80. Silver was up 2 pennies at $17.24. Platinum was up $9 at $923, and palladium was up $5 at $17.73. The USDX today was up 0.08 at 97.92. Crude oil brought back what it lost yesterday, 1.70 at 56.91. And the paper markets today, they also reversed their steep declines from earlier in the day. And but the Dow is down 113 points. That's not even 0.5% anymore. So I can remember we used to report 100 points to the downside, and it was like, oh my gosh, the Dow is down 100 points. The world fell apart. Now it's like, it's 0.5%. What's the big deal? 27,820. The NASDAQ was down 43 at 8,526. The S&P is down 11 at 3,108. But that doesn't make the paper markets any better than what it was at that point in time. And the 10-year yield, if you brought inflation back into those numbers of 113, David, probably be, you know, what would 113 be based on inflation from, you know, 10, 15 years ago? So you're probably looking at about a 500-point day. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, certainly over 300.
Yeah. So European, well, that's what the 10-year yield, 1.74. All European and Asian markets were negative. And remember, we've been talking about, or I've been talking about, the fear and greed index. Yesterday was at, I think it was 80, or Monday was 80. Now we're 74. So it's slowly losing steam. Bitcoin's about ready to break 8 once again. So let's see. Oh, I think it's time to bring Wendy Wilson on. And I always enjoy having her on the program. And I'm going to say, well, hello, Wendy.
Well, hello, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hi there.
Hi, I thought we'd talk about the plant proteins that can change genes. You know, so your DNA.
Blue genes?
No, not
no,
those.
Okay. All right,
oh,
right.
It's the scientific gene.
Okay.
Well, you know, science has really been testing plants and herbs to, you know, dissect the chemicals in them, which tend to exhibit a lot of power to influence our health. So most, if not all, the scientific studies that are really structured in such a way to benefit drug companies so they can come up with a way to make a new product. But in the early 1900s, when petrochemical pharmaceutical drugs were first being made and they were marketed, they were having trouble convincing physicians of the day and patients to use them because they say, hey, we already have these plants and you're saying the drugs work just as well as the plants do. So the war between the drugs and the herbs began. So with some underhanded tactics, though, Rockefeller, who founded the AMA and the first petrochemical drug plant, he eliminated the natural healing schools that were teaching the physicians and got them all deregulated. So then doctors were only allowed to go to pharmaceutical type AMA type of institutions for learning. So now today we have, you know, doctors prescribing petrochemical drugs instead. So we're going to look at what they found out, because what they are finding out is the natural healing doctors of long ago were right. So we're going to check this out because plants have a lot of power. We don't think they are. We're not taught that they have any power. Actually, we're used to throwing Roundup on weeds, and a lot of times our weeds are our most potent medicinals, you know. Now, in the ancient world, food, spices, and your herbs were used because they work to sustain health. And today, scientists identify chemical components in your plants, like herbs, and then take their chemical action and how they influence the bodies and try to make a drug out of it. Now, in February of this year, 2019, the University of California at Riverside found that plants have genes that fight infectious bacteria. And at some point in science, they're going to discover that, hey, plants also fight viruses, fungus, yeast, and parasites. But, however, we have learned, science is really not content knowing your foods, your spices, your herbs have this healing power just as they are. So science wants to make some changes. And so this research was funded by the National Institute of Health and the National Science Foundation, along with the UCR Agricultural Experiment Cooperative Extension Service. And their research got published in the February 2019 Journal of Nature Communications. So underway on this research, according to this University of California research, on the plant gene mechanisms, it's led to a modifying of plants and what science thinks will make them better. And we're familiar with GMO, right? GMO yes. Plant? Yep. But what I'm about to tell you is going beyond GMO, okay? Here's a quote from Professor Jin. He's with the microbiology and plant pathology at the University of California. He says, with our understanding of molecule mechanisms of regulation, we can modify or treat crops to induce their immune response against bacteria. Now, to some people, that may sound really lovely, have healthier crops, but wait, it gets better. They had found a core protein, and this is kind of like the linchpin, okay? Much of the gene modification has to do with a lot of RNA protein. Now, the California researchers identified this core protein commonly found in most species of plants. And they think that when the plant protein encounters, let's say, bacteria, there's this controlled process that's released that they are calling post-translational modification. So the RNA molecules regulate the process of the gene expression. So what science is doing is they're mapping the RNA gene expression interface. It's an important cellular mechanism that all living organisms rely on. And they're going to mess with this. Okay? So once they have the core protein, they can turn the plant genes on or off, highly influence the gene expression. And they're calling this gene silencing. Okay? Now, I don't think God makes junk. And I think if there's a gene that's switched on, it's supposed to be on. You know what I mean?
Agreed.
So the point of the research is they know how bacterial infections will induce gene response in your plants and its immune response of the plant. They also know if they silence a gene, it can actually push the protein too high and stunt the plant growth so our crops won't grow. So they could intend to modify plant production and enhance crop yields, but they run the risk of destroying entire crops if they get it wrong. So the scientists believe that they're not too worried about plant proteins and regulating them and getting them out of control and swinging too far in one direction and getting too high, because they intend to help these other genes along with the translational modification to attempt to restore a balance. I personally wouldn't modify God's copyright, because you run the risk of a chain reaction effect. And, of course, the scientists are not too worried, because whatever modification they're making in the RNA structure, they can reverse it. So RNA, gene modification, gene CRISPR using, whatever you want to call it, they say they can reverse it. DNA gene editing is not reversible. That's the difference. Okay? Let me read you this quote from, again, Professor Jin. He says, if the plant protein associated with the RNA were to remain at such high levels after normal conditions are applied, it would be detrimental to plant growth. So they understand the risk, okay? They understand it's a big risk agriculturally. But have you noticed something, Melanie and Dave? Have you not noticed that the immune system of plants, animals, and humans is the target of science lately? It is. Controlling when you control immunity, you control what lives or dies. So all living things have these built-in defenses, and science is mapping the gene silencing triggers of all of it. Here's a quote from the microbiology professor, plant pathology, University of California, Dr. Jin. He says, until this study, how plant proteins were controlled during a pathogen attack were unclear, and how the plant's immune response was regulated by gene expression was largely a mystery. But our study is the first to map that regulating mechanism within the RNA in plant immune system responses. Now, here's something that's kind of scary. The RNA silencing has pitfalls to them, and in 2004, they well understood what those were. They said, science has discovered the power behind RNA gene editing, and according to the U.S. National Library of Science Institute of Health, they said this in 2004. They said, RNA interfaces are an ancient and natural immunity mechanism. RNA gene editing can be exploited to artificially inhibit the expression of any gene of interest. RNA gene manipulation directly affects the production or function of the cells. An RNA interface can be used to suppress gene expression for or against disease. Isn't that a scary thought?
It really is, yes.
So what they got, you got gene profiling going on here. And in April 2013, science was researching using drugs to influence the gene expression mechanisms within you and me. So you may hear it referred to as a personalized medicine. You ever hear that lately?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
So this is from the U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health. They said this in April 2013. I'm going to read a few quotes from them because they're key. They said, successful employment of gene expression signatures in drug development depends on clinically identifying protein mechanisms. Now, they got the core protein now. Sorry. They also go on to say, in light of the breadth and diverse application of gene expression in drug therapy and in clinical applications, research is in various stages of drug development using high-level strategic maps of the fit-the-purpose application of gene expression. We recognize this type of research using gene mechanism maps will advance rapidly, and it has. They go on to say there have been several studies in employing gene expression using drug-induced technology, which can involve adverse reactions, and in some studies, nervous system neuropathy resulted. Okay. They also say vaccination is one of the most effective methods for controlling antibody T-cell response. Several reports have been published using gene expression profiling technology with regards to vaccines. Recent systems using vaccinology show an approach describing using genome-wide gene expression to influence the host's response to the vaccine. The use of blood signature cells associated with the essential B-cell, T-cells necessary for the human immune system to create antibodies were flagged biomarkers, so they have the ability to influence, suppress, or magnify your immune system's ability to make antibodies.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, without B cells and T cells, you have no immune system. Okay. So if they wipe those out with some gene expression, you know, editing cells on and off, you have no immune system, folks. That's scary stuff. They go on, last quote was, gene expression profiling and emerging molecule profiling technologies have become an integral part of drug development and even used in personalized care. So this is a field that's not going to go away. It's just going to advance, be highly sophisticated and targeted. I just don't think they should modify a person's immune system. I really don't.
I mean, they can improve on it.
See, the way your immune system works, it's highly sophisticated, and it has to be in a certain balance. And your immune system, just like any organ or cell in your body, is influenced by what you put in it. So if you have immune systems that aren't working properly or at a significant level, what have we been doing to suppress it? A lot of times it's drug therapies, diet, toxic exposures. So vaccines are an artificial infection. They're not using the natural way the immune system codes pathogens and non-self invaders. So if, for instance, Melanie, you touched a surface and there was, let's say, viruses on there, your skin has oils on it, and a certain pH level that is not very inviting to infections like that. And should the infection be hardy enough to pass that pH level of defense on your skin and go into your pores and seek to work its way to your blood system where it can start to invade most of your cells and make you sick, all the time it's making that way up to your blood system, the body knows it's a foreign substance and it's communicating this to your immune system. And by the time it hits the blood system, the immune system has already started to make an antibody. So this is the way the immune system works. It's kind of a general simplified version of it. But when you have an artificial infection and that infection goes directly into the bloodstream, the immune system has not been alerted and it makes no antibody because whatever's there, it thinks it's supposed to be there. So, yeah, so, and that came from Dr. Anthony Morris, the chief virologist of the FDA back in 1976. I talked to him in the 80s, though, and 90s on the phone, and he was giving me some, you know, general understanding of how the immune system works. And so the whole thing is, if I had to wrap it up, I'd say science is exploiting immunity, the immune systems of plants, animals, and humans. Yep.
You know, and if we know, and we know where it all goes, you know, only those that are, any good that they might find never trickles down to the common guy or anything like that, very rarely. I mean, I was reading an article today that they, and actually the person interviewed was the doctor who helped create this pharmaceutical for heart patients, and he's coming out against Pfizer, I guess, because they're charging like $600 and some a day for it.
So
only
nice?
The wealth, so only the wealthy get the benefits of anything that might be,
well, ask
come
yourself,
from the from the medical profession.
Well, ask yourself, you know, are they all about wellness? Are they all about healing people? Are they
all about
controlling disease and the symptoms of disease? That's what it's about.
That's what it's about.
It's more lucrative than healing anybody, that's for sure. Yep. That's what they look at it. But I think our strength is relying on God's plants, his herbs, to strengthen us metabolically. And we have a promise, a divine promise. They're here to heal us from the Bible. So I go with God on that. I really do.
Amen. Amen. And we're out of time. Give us your contact real quick.
Sure. 866-229-3663. 866-229-3663. ThePowerHerbs.com. See you guys later.
All righty. Thank you, Wendy. And we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We're going to get right to it today. You know, we talked a little bit about the markets, and there's a lot of things going on, and again, it's the markets reacting to the trade deal. I tell you, this is more than a roller coaster. And in reference to the trade deal between China and the U.S., and of course, it's now like they're saying
it's like the Tower of Terror,
I guess. But now it's not going to be completed by the end of the year. I think they have a little one done. I think they're just holding out on it to introduce it at the proper time to help with the elections. That's what I think is going on with that. But, and a phase deal is not going to make any big changes whatsoever. But anyway, that's just it's a possibility. It's a possibility. And, of course, minutes of the FOMC meeting from last month further contributed to a little bit of uncertainty by investors. And, again, 0.5% is nothing. So we're looking, it's starting to look like the completion of a partial trade deal could be pushed into 2020. China wants more tariff rollbacks, extensive tariff rollbacks. U.S. isn't committing to anything. So, again, we've been here before, and we'll see where this all takes us, Dave. And I don't know if you have anything on this. I was going to kind of hold off on this until we went into the to talk about Syria. But I go to a website. I don't mean to change topics here, but I did not know this. I go to a website. It's called antiwar.com, and they really do have great information. They really give you updates on what's happening in Saudi Arabia, what's happening in Iran, Syria, Yemen, so forth and whatnot. And the U.S. ends talks as South Korea balks, and supposedly South Korea turns and signs a defense pact with China. Now, to some, everybody says, well, this is a good deal because, you know, we can bring our troops home and so forth and whatnot. But I guess South Korea, their annual fee is almost $1 billion. And I guess President Trump upped it to $5 billion. I don't have any problems with all that. But everybody walked out of the meeting with these officials, I guess it was Tuesday, yesterday. And... but then for them to be signing things with China and so forth, yeah, I kind of wonder if that is a good move or not. And then when we have China being stinky on the trade agreement, it all comes together. It's all part of it. Maybe a minor part, but it's some part of it, I would think, Dave.
Don't know. Don't know much about it.
So anyway, so yeah, the meeting was canceled, and I mean, we do have a lot of troops over in South Korea. I know we stopped the military drills that were in the seas because of North Korea. North Korea has come out and said, no more summits with the United States. Now we have this thing going on with South Korea, and I know a lot of people say, well, what's the point of being there anyway? I agree, you know, bring our troops home. But so just another place that could be heating up and putting a little snag in the trade agreement. So if you want to go on and finish up about if you have anything interesting about the FOMC.
Well, the Fed did release the minutes of the Open Market Committee meeting the end of last month. They indicate that Fed officials are continuing to look at ways to make sure funding pressures in the overnight lending market, the so-called repo market, don't cause a problem again. The FOMC members apparently weighed several options ahead for keeping the repo market stable, and as well as for maintaining the Fed's key lending rate within its target range. Those discussions came about a month and a half after funding pressure sent the repo rate soaring, temporarily as high as into the 9%, and the Fed funds rate briefly well above its target range. The repo markets considered the plumbing of the U.S. financial system, as it's the place where banks go for the overnight loans they use to fund their operations. And one option that received considerable discussion was a so-called standing repo facility. It's essentially a mechanism where the Fed will step in whenever needed to supply banks with reserves in exchange for so-called ultra-safe collateral like U.S. Treasury debt.
Well, you know, the standing repo idea, of course, is a popular one on Wall Street, and policymakers says they're not ready to make any decisions. Instead, they're going to continue to watch how the market operations instituted since the September problems are working. If the September problems are working, then why are they continuing to put money into it? And if the problems are working because they're putting money into it, then they're not working.
Yeah, or something else is going on. We read but ran out of time on Monday's program. There was talk about whether or not a lot of this market manipulation is going on now because the Fed and other central banks are in the process of secretly bailing out perhaps one or more too big to fail banks, say like Deutsche Bank, which has had profound problems. I mean, that could spell disaster for the financial markets, I believe, if word were to get out about that. If with every seeming governmental and other action, emphasizing transparency these days, it seems to me that there'd just be a lot of pushback for something like that. But anyway, the repo markets in any effect still is a real big issue, and particularly in this country. Some people think that it amounts to another quantitative easing program, QE4, if you will. But the Fed, repeatedly emphasize that efforts to expand their balance sheet, with the aim of increasing bank reserves, isn't the same as QE that's used to stimulate the economy during and after typically a financial crisis.
Any money going anywhere is a stimulus to the economy. I mean, come on. Because if they weren't doing it, everything would fall apart. So it's keeping it together. So as far as I'm concerned, that is quote unquote a stimulus to the economy.
By definition, there's no way around it.
No, so they're just, it truly is amazing. When they think it's no big deal, $100 billion a night, not always, not every night, but they've passed that several times. I read, Dave, where they say, oh, well, it's $1 billion here, $100 billion there. I mean, we got to be up to the trillion already, or close to it, that they've already put in since September. You would think.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't looked for a total amount of money, or maybe they just total it on a day to day because then it gets paid back. So maybe it's not a continuing number, I guess. But something that we bring you every week, we have mortgage apps. It's up for homes a little bit, down for refinancing. And a couple of weeks ago, it was just reversed. We've had months of refinancing where it was out doing new homes, and now it's reversed. So we had a huge jump the week before. Mortgage refinance demand pulled back sharply last week. Borrowers were less worried about rising rates, and that caused total mortgage application volume to decline 2.2% for the week. And, of course, this is according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Refinance applications dropped 8% for the week, also after jumping 13% the previous week. So that's still in line, and no surprises there.
Nope. Joel Kahn, who's with the MBA, said, again, U.S.-China trade anxieties, Hong Kong protests pulled U.S. Treasuries lower last week, and the 30-year fixed mortgage rate followed the same path, dipping below 4%. Again, mortgage apps to purchase a home increased 7% for the week and were 7% higher than a year ago. As we've been reporting, housing demand is very strong this fall thanks to lower mortgage rates and pent-up demand, consumer demand from a slow spring.
Well, you know, yesterday we had Greg Hunter on the program, Dave, and, you know, we were talking about the $21 trillion that has gone missing. And it's funny because $6.4 trillion on post-9/11 wars and military action in the Middle East and Asia is what has been spent. So I guess maybe since the $21 trillion, double that, we're at four. So I guess maybe we could say almost $13 trillion has been spent. We'll just double this number since the money that's missing, maybe it'd be a double of this. But anyway, the total is $2 trillion more than the whole federal government spending during the recently completed 2019 fiscal year. Government has spent $4.4 trillion during the fiscal year that ended on the 30th of September. The Watson Institute of International and Public Affairs at Brown University also finds that more than 801,000 people have died as a direct result of fighting. I bet that number is much, much higher. I'd like to see the breakout on that. But of those, more than 335,000 or 42% were civilians. Another 21 million have been displaced. And I saw, again, Israel bombed. I guess we'll be talking about that a little bit later on the program. Bombed Syria, I guess. Pretty good, Dave.
Bombed Iranians. Figures in Syria. Now, it's sobering, I believe, this study that's just come out. The $6.4 trillion is not necessarily a surprise, but boy, is it an eye-opener or should serve as a big reminder of at least the budgetary cost, the cost to taxpayers. Now, because most, if not all of that amount is being paid for through borrowing, through increased debt. And so it's sort of adding insult to injury. It is interesting that, I mean, the report does spell out, give some perspective that this truly has become a global war on terror, with more than 80 countries reportedly engaged in some aspects of the wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Syria. But in terms of the $21 trillion that so-called missing money from the Pentagon, it does beg the question, does this $6.4 trillion only include what's known as on budget, above the line budget figures? You know, in my own mind, there's this part of the budget, the defense national security budget, that is as untransparent as you can be, sort of the black hole in the budget, and one of what's called an off-budget expense. And because it's off-budget, because it's in the black hole, it's extremely difficult to know what that figure is. And so one thing we can be confident in saying to you is that this $6.4 trillion is a minimum figure and quite possibly is substantially higher than what's been reported. And in March, we know the Pentagon estimated that the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria have cost each U.S. taxpayer over $7,600. That's through the end of last September 30th. Pay attention, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, I hope everybody feels safer now, anyway. You know, I find this interesting, particularly because it comes from the Senate, and they unanimously approved a pair of bills yesterday meant to support the pro-democracy protest in Hong Kong. And they passed the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act by unanimous consent, which would mandate that the State Department report annually on Hong Kong's status as an autonomous territory of China. The legislation would also impose sanctions on any officials who commit human rights violations in Hong Kong. Senator Marco, I don't get this. Senator Marco Rubio, of course, of Florida, said that the passage of this bill is an important step in holding accountable those Chinese and Hong Kong government officials responsible for Hong Kong's eroding autonomy and human rights violations. Why is that our job? I don't get it. What are we going to go to war with China to protect Hong Kong's?
No, but if there's any way a country like ours can and should show leadership, it's in the diplomatic channels, especially if it's something that we can use to persuade another country, particularly one as large as China. I'm not sure this will have any effect in the short run.
And everywhere we stuck our nose in to supposedly support, everyone has turned out in disasters. And what really is surprising me is that it comes through the timing is not the best. I don't know how this would also support the trade agreement to getting that done. But it does allow them to not sell them certain weapons and everything. And we'll talk about, we'll continue this a little bit more when we come back from the break. Please stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today.
day, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Heading into the break, we were talking about the legislation that was passed, the bill supporting Hong Kong protests. And I don't know, I could see it both sides, but I just think it's, you know, a little bit to the dangerous. It still has to be passed, though, by President Trump. Is that correct?
It's true. There may have to be a conference committee, too. The House has already passed its version of this, and I believe the language is somewhat different.
Yes.
But, yeah, in any event, you know, something that Trump would have to pass or veto. He's been largely quiet on this issue, particularly as trade talks are on again, off again. So who knows where this particular one is going to go. It is surprising in my mind that, you know, this came out of so suddenly out of the Senate. But I guess anything that's more symbolic like this, I mean, there is some, as Melody mentioned, you know, would prohibit selling of certain types of ammunition to the Hong Kong police. But I believe this is meant as a symbolic gesture and a reminder that we are just a little bit away in South Korea. And to the extent that, you know, China decides to send in thousands of troops to quell these uprisings, that could have serious implications. But it is, in any event, it is an uptick in geopolitical volatility. There's no question about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know. I think so many things could just come out of that. Maybe good, maybe bad, maybe both. Maybe you have to do the bad before you get the good. I don't know. But you're right. You mentioned South Korea. Well, we just know that they all both walked out of the meetings because, you know, President Trump wanted to admit their fee to from, you know, almost $1 billion to $5 billion, and supposedly South Korea is signing deals with China. So I don't know what's going on, but I don't, I mean, we're not little flies on the walls. We don't know what's going on. We're not privy to that, but these are all things that should make you think, ladies and gentlemen. And when we talk about black swans, heaven forbid, I don't want them, but I like white swans. But this is something like this that, you know, it's just sitting there waiting to happen. Let's go ahead and go into the, because it just baffles me why people would even have an Amazon. Well, is this the same thing where, or is that UPS where they can ring, go right into your house? They have keys to your house and they can go in and deliver your packages. Is that UPS or is that Amazon or both?
I don't know.
But I guess this is something different. We see the advertisements on television about Ring doorbell cameras where if you, it's, and Amazon is considering adding facial recognition to the technology for its Ring doorbell cameras, so if somebody comes to the door, you ring, you can see who it is.
That's a distinct possibility. Amazon told U.S. Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, that facial recognition is a contemplated but unreleased feature of its home security cameras. But it added that there aren't any plans currently to coordinate that feature with its law enforcement partnerships. Markey wrote to Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos in September, raising privacy and civil liberty concerns about Ring's video sharing agreements with police departments across the country. Pardon me.
Bless you.
Gosh.
Gesundheit.
Oh, my. The company encourages police to tap in into Ring's Neighbors app. It's a forum for residents to share videos of suspicious activity captured by their home security cameras. Markey also expressed alarm that Ring may be pursuing face scanning technology after a patent application showed the company's exploring a system that could flag certain people as suspicious and automatically alert people. Now, Amazon's initial response to Markey said Ring doesn't currently offer facial recognition. Then Markey followed up with another letter to Bezos asking why it's mentioned in Ring's privacy policy. Well, in a November 1st follow-up, Amazon said that the company frequently innovates based on customer demand and that facial recognition is an increasingly common feature in cameras made by competitors such as Google's Nest division. What's not said there, just as a quick aside, is that we don't know that Amazon customers have actually been demanding this feature.
Well,
in fact, I think there's reason to be skeptical that they would be for privacy related concerns. In any event, you know, Markey's questions about facial recognition were part of a broader concerns that some lawmakers and privacy advocates have about Amazon Ring and its police partnerships. Amazon sought to address those concerns, emphasizing that camera owners have a choice about whether to share videos. We can see now, I can see it now, Melody, book clubs will now transform into doorbell video clubs. Let's sit down and share our videos and see what's really going on in our neighborhood, you know, when we're away. In any event, more than 600 police departments have signed up to Ring's network since last year, and many say it's becoming a useful crime-fighting tool. Ironically, Markey's hometown of Malden, Massachusetts, counts their police department as one of them. There's still ongoing privacy concerns, and I hope let's hope that they're addressed before these new technologies become so widespread that it'll be impossible to turn away. Just further evidence, Melody, that we live in increasingly interesting times. And that, well, by the way, is this week's Brevity is Golden.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it amazes me, though, people really don't care about their privacy anymore, I don't think. I mean, I do, and I know our listeners do, but there's a large segment of the population out there, particularly the younger. The younger, I'd say under, I don't know, under 50, 45, 50, really don't care about their privacy because they do have these services with UPS or Amazon or both. Where you get the, you leave, they know where your hidden key is, and they go right into your home to deliver packages. And then you have to have a camera to watch the front door once they come in to make sure that they don't do anything wrong. And I'm thinking to my, and I know people who do this, and I'm thinking, well, do you really think that if they really wanted to come back, that taking their picture while they're delivering your packages one day, that it would prevent them from coming back another day or whatever. And it's like people just, they just don't think ahead.
Sounds like you're a candidate for Ring, Melody.
No, oh my gosh, no. No. I mean, it amazes me. I mean, there's this thing, this app on the computer. It kind of cracks me up. It's a good thing, though, too. I mean, my house isn't on it. I don't have one of those. But these people who do have these doorbells, it's a neighborhood. It gives you a section. I don't know if it's a 5-mile radius, maybe a 10-mile radius. And if there's suspicious activity, and usually it's somebody who pulls up and, you know, is driving by slowly a couple times. You know, maybe they're scoping it out. Maybe they're just looking for an address, or the person who goes up on the porch to steal a package. Mm-hmm. You know, then they'll have the video of him, and it'll alert you if someone thinks that it's suspicious, whether it is or whether it isn't. I don't know. It's just it's a strange world, Dave, as you mentioned. It's a strange new world with this technology, and it certainly has taken over our lives. And I guess in some aspects we can view it as good, and other aspects we can view it as not so good. And but we've certainly have allowed it to control our lives, which I do not think is good. Who is that comedian, Benny? Wasn't there a comedian, Benny? Or am I thinking of the restaurant?
No, the British.
The British, Benny?
The British guy.
Come on.
Benny, Benny Haha. Benny.
I'm thinking of Hanna, but Benny Haha.
Benny Haha.
Anyway, this is not that guy. This is Benny Gantz. That was my lead in. Benny Gantz. Benny Hill. Thank you, Todd. I know the listeners hate it when we can't think of something, and they know it. But it was Benny Hill. Well, this is Benny Gantz, the chief political.
Todd's the man.
He's the man, the chief political rival of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. He said today that he failed to form a new government. He had a midnight deadline. So what happens next? If he can't form it, does it go back to Benny Netanyahu, BB?
Dave? No. In fact, it doesn't. It's already been to BB. I believe it will go to the Israeli parliament. They have 3 weeks to come up with a candidate. Any candidate, doesn't have to be Gantz or Netanyahu. Someone who can get a majority of 61 seats in the 120-seat House for their coalition government. You know, that final stage, which Israel's entering for the first time in its history, if that final stage fails to produce a new government, parliament would be dissolved, and Israel would start preparing for its next election, most likely this spring. Now, Netanyahu, who's Israel's longest-serving prime minister, he's leader of the conservative Likud party. Gantz is a centrist, relatively new political character. They've both said they've wanted to join forces in a broad government of national unity based on their two parties, but they failed 3 times to agree on a power-sharing arrangement. It's amazing. Of course, the negotiations have been complicated by Netanyahu's legal situation. Gantz has said that he's been reluctant to sign on with Netanyahu, power sharing, that is, because he faces possible indictment in 3 cases involving allegations of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust. Mm. But the good news in that respect, well, depending on who you support, is that Israel's attorney general is expected to announce by the end of this month whether charges will be pressed against Netanyahu.
Well, you know, it has been a little bit quiet. You know, we don't hear the big comments coming out of the administration and so forth, but in the meantime, Israel's military is saying it's carrying out a wide-scale strike on Iranian targets in Syria following a rocket attack on the Israeli-controlled Golan Heights. This was a statement earlier today. And the military says fighter jets struck dozens of targets. Military said it also struck positions of the Syrian army after a Syrian air defense missile was fired. The rocket attack on the Golan Heights was further clear proof of the purpose of Iranian entrenchment in Syria. And let's see. Amnesty International says that more than 100 protesters had been killed in the 21 cities in Iran during the unrest that broke out over a rise in fuel prices last week. That's happening everywhere. And as we see the rise in fuel and fuel tax and all this kind of stuff, they had snipers shot into crowds of protesters from rooftops and in one case from a helicopter.
Wow. Yikes. Jeez. You can run, but you cannot hide. Yeah, these anti-government protests began on Friday after fuel price rises of around 50% were announced. Amnesty International says that at least 106 protesters in 21 cities have been killed. The organization believes that the real death toll may be much higher, however, with some suggesting as many as 200 have been killed. Scary situation, Melody. It's not Kansas.
Well, certainly is not. Let's see. We got about a minute left on the. I guess there was another young person who died from vaping. I think it was Florida yesterday or the day before. Now the American Medical Association has called for an immediate ban on all electronic cigarettes and vaping devices. It aims to lobby for state and federal laws, regulations, or legal action to achieve a ban. We know the industry is going to fight back. The AMA cited a surge in underage teen use of cigarettes, and it does contain nicotine. It's simple. We must keep nicotine products out of the hands of young people. This is what the AMA's president said. But I think it's a little more than just vaping, Dave, isn't it? Most of those that are sickened, they had vaped THC, which is the ingredient in marijuana, not nicotine. So,
correct. But, over 40 deaths so far.
Yeah, but, you know, they're trying to pass legislation to pass marijuana. So, you know, they're not going to blame it on the THC that's causing the problem, but the nicotine. Anyway, we'll see what happens. And what is happening is we're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.